Welcome back to WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are doing bonus bye week Baltimore Positive, and Don Mueller, I said nothing good to say about the Orioles right now. We'll let the World Series bake and germinate and all that. Let the Ravens rest. But we're talking about the great things happening in Baltimore, and I know I gave you full latitude to produce here, and you have booked on. I said, what are the best eight stories where we haven't done a full sit-down with someone who's a politician or a community organizer, and you said we're going to have Chris Battaglia on a program. So,
well, one of the Chris Battaglia, principal at Benjamin Franklin High School. Chris, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
good.
We don't have to call it Mason Cove anymore. I mean, didn't that give it sort of like a definition as to where it is? And I'm familiar with the neighborhood down in the Brooklyn Homes and the Curtis Bay area. Really an incredible story you're about to tell us, I think.
Yeah, actually, Masonville Cove, when I first became principal here back in 2011, I was really worried about that name because the school went through multiple name changes for a variety of reasons before we got here. And Masonville Cove, I was worried about offending people who lived in Masonville Cove, and then somebody finally told me that the last person who lived in the community of Masonville Cove moved out in 1953. So then I realized, well, you know what? I think we can just become Benjamin Franklin High School.
Benjamin Franklin High School. Chris, we probably, Nestor's tied your hands a little bit because along with being the principal of one of the truly successful community schools in Baltimore City, you're an avid sports fan, and he said we can't talk Ravens or Orioles, so we'll have to do that another time.
No, man, we'll do that. We do that at our tailgate, you know, with adult beverages and crab cakes and all that. But I think it feels like such a daunting challenge, right? And there is a theme here with Don and I, and I know you have a background with Don. I met Don; he was the high school guidance counselor at my high school in August of 1982. I've embarrassed him over the last 9 months with that story about how I was coming and my parents were incensed that I was not in the journalism program. And Don made sure that I got into journalism one. Look how this worked out 37 years later, right? But you know, the notion of, oh, I'm going to drop Nestor down to make him a principal at a Baltimore City public school in 2019. I remember about 15 years ago, maybe about 18 years ago, I was nationally syndicated. Patterson High School invited me over to speak to a sports business leadership academy. And when I showed up, the kids were completely not interested in me. I was almost a little embarrassed, and I cut the segment short, and I walked out feeling like I could not help these children. And this was 18 years ago. I don't think I've ever told that story. I don't think I've ever told you that story.
First I've heard
that. I showed up. The kids were so unruly and so disrespectful and could not be calmed down to any degree to the point where I just said, I have to leave. And I literally walked out. But that was one of my experiences. I can't imagine the notion of being a principal. And yet so many of you have taken this on and are succeeding. And I want to give you a little oxygen to tell me about where you were and where you are.
Okay. Well, actually, the example you just gave is something that kind of speaks to what the whole community school model is about. Let me hit that first, and then I'll go back so I can seize on your story. One of the things about when you partner with people or when you bring people in to work with the school, it's really important to be intentional about those relationships. And so if you bring in somebody and it's not a good match for the school, not because either side isn't, you know, good at what they do, but if it's not a good match, then you end up having an experience like the one you had so that when you leave, you remember that story here 18 years later. And so what our goal is as a community school is when we partner with people, we want to make sure it's a good match. So it's not like going out and grabbing everybody saying, here, come help. It's a matter of, hey, get to know us. Find out what we do. We share, you know, what we do. They share what they do. And then we put them in a position as a partner to be successful because we want them to be successful as much as we want our students and our school to be successful. So in that scenario, which was a long time ago, I probably would have, instead of reaching out to say, hey, this guy's successful in radio, come on in and talk, I think that we probably would have known each other a little bit longer, and we probably would have talked about what we were hoping to gain out of it, and then we probably would have been very intentional about who we invited to talk to you, because that bad taste that you left with, that goes on, obviously.
Well, no, I've done this, not 100 times. I'm actually lecturing Mount St. Mary's in a couple weeks, doing it via Skype. I just... I've compartmentalized it. I don't know that I've ever told that story, but I absolutely remember coming over, and it was just not a good experience for me, and the kids weren't interested that I was there, right? So part of it was I experienced this thing where I was dropped in at 11 o'clock on a Tuesday morning or whatever, and I'm thinking for all of you who do this every day, to have young people engaged where there's an internet now. I mean, they didn't have the internet, I think, the story I'm telling, it's that long ago, probably 2001, like going back that far, that the engagement level of what it means to be a high school principal, and I kid Don about doing it 25, 30 years ago, where it is for you today. Tell us what it's like to be a principal at your school.
Great. I've been a building administrator, a school administrator in three different districts in Baltimore, two county districts, and now Baltimore City. And I can tell you that the job is difficult no matter where you are, so nobody has it harder or easier than anybody else. It's just different.
Don just made it look easy.
Well, he did, which is why every day I draw on a lot of the things that he did when he was my principal. But when we think about that being a principal in Baltimore City, the main thing is that, you know, kids are kids. They're still the same kids in every other surrounding district. But the barriers in their life affect people differently. And so they're being forced to grow up a little bit quicker or deal with a lot of things which impact them outside of school and also very much inside of school. And as a high school principal, it's important that at Benjamin Franklin High School, we created a staff which focuses on building those positive relationships, because we implement something called Capturing Kids' Hearts, which is a process that we were all trained in. And basically, it's you have no business messing with a kid's mind to first you capture their heart. And so we attack everything that way, because when you build a relationship with a student, you get to learn a little bit about them. And then you also, they lower some of those barriers that they put up. Now, the problem with that as a high school principal is that when they trust you enough to tell you what's going on in their life, which is affecting them, you're not equipped to address it all. I mean, it can be quite overwhelming. I mean, many people can talk about how to solve these problems from afar, but when you're actually in it and someone is trusting enough to say, these are the things going on in my life, and you're a high school principal or a teacher, you might not be able to help them, or you might try to help them and not do a very good job of it. It might actually be counterproductive when you're talking about things like mental illness or, you know, different stressors and social emotional learning. So,
well, there's also not a class for that. I mean, I'm kind of amazed. I turned 51 this week, and I'm thinking of the things that I've learned since high school. There's no high school class on how to manage your emotions, right? Like that, the psychology classes that maybe can't come later on, but we don't deal with that in schools in America, do we?
No, I mean, if we were to offer a course like that here, it would be sort of like just a canned course. Like we could teach people about psychology, but really the kind of psychology that we're doing is helping kids deal with the emotions that they have, and then helping teachers recognize some of those things so that they can think about Algebra 1 or U.S. history in the light of, is this child ready to learn? Where are they emotionally right now? Do we give them the support? And that doesn't mean that we don't teach the curriculum from the time the bell rings, but it means that you're much more in tune. You can get up there and teach for 60 minutes in a class, but if a kid is giving you signs that their head is somewhere else, you can ignore it and keep teaching and feel like you got through your lesson. But more importantly, we want to know about the kid. And when the teacher touches on that kid and they find out, hey, we got to get them some help, that's where the community school model helps, because they can turn that kid over to somebody else in the building who is trained in that area, and it helps both the student, the family, and the teacher, because now the teacher doesn't have to become, I do everything.
Chris, we're really trying to shine the light on the whole Kerwin discussion and the need for the Kerwin funding and how important it is. David Hornbeck talks about it being a once in a generation.
Don, you're totally breaking up. I can't hear you.
I'm sorry. Once in a generation. Can you hear me now?
Yeah. Go for it.
Once in a generation opportunity. And folks hear the term community school bantered about. Can you give us the Community School for Dummies primer for our listeners, for those watching on Facebook? Tell us what differentiates a community school.
Yeah, that's when Nestor, I'm the same age as you, a little bit older, and when Don, when you were in the school system, where I grew up in the suburbs, a community school was the school in your community. All right. And so when if your listeners are listening, they're probably sitting there going, community school. It just means that if I live right. in Towson, I go to Towson. It's different. A community school is much more about creating the wraparound services you need to teach the whole child, which means you're bringing in resources and expertise, which not only deal with the student, but deal with the family and extensions from there.
So what happens after 3 o'clock and then before 8 a.m., right?
Well, no, this is during the day.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
And yeah, during the day and beyond. So it really isn't a 8 to 3. It's a 24/7. So
that's what I meant. I meant you send the child home at 3 o'clock. It's everything that happens after that, right? That really affects the child greatly, right?
But I think it might even be more than that, right, Chris?
Yeah. So, you know, some of the things that we do here at Benjamin Franklin with community school models. So we have a mental health clinic. In fact, I'm sitting in the mental health clinician's office now because it's nice and quiet and I could talk to you.
You clear your mind there, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You get some help if you need it, Chris.
So when you have a mental health clinic through a community school model, we've partnered with United Way for the United Way Ben Center, which is something we had created a while back. And then that clinician also has interns through a partnership with the University of Maryland School of Social Work. So we maximize resources and money where we are getting a lot of services where we don't have to pay all those positions. So you have a mental health clinic where when kids are having a difficult time or you know something is going on in their life, they have a place to come, and it's in the school where it's not like a stigma. So they know that there's somebody down there who cares, and they can actually help them. They also get to know more about the families, and they can share what's appropriate, never what's confidential, but what's appropriate to help the school end of things have a better understanding on how we can work with them. Mental health is probably the biggest thing which affects our kids in the classroom that our community school model addresses.
But when I was a kid and I had a problem, literally, I would go to you. You were my guidance counselor, right? Literally, I remember Ms. Stopek was also a guidance counselor. That it was available.
But this is way different.
But that's all I had was knock on the door of a guidance counselor.
Chris, talk about how different this is, because it's really helpful when Nestor... You know,
I haven't been in high school.
What Nestor does when he does that, I think, is react like the folks in their cars right now listening to us. And they're going, well, I had a counselor. Walk us through why that's different.
It's very different. I also have a counselor, right? And so who does the same role that Don, when he was your counselor, Nestor does. You know,
Fair enough.
So counselors do a lot of things, such as the credit checks and the helping with transcripts and helping enroll kids, all those kind of things. And she's also there for kids who may have a problem. I think when you're thinking about the problems that kids have, there's never going to be a position to address it. The volume is so high that everyone is basically a counselor, if we're just being honest, in how you're dealing with a kid. But in the mental health portion, the mental health clinic of the school, these are trained people who can truly go a little bit deeper. And, you know, where I might get to know a kid and I might think this is really good advice, this is what I would do based on my experiences, it might be the exact opposite to do. So let me give you a very hard example. You do lockdown drills, right? Everybody thinks it's a good idea. You do lockdown drills in the world that we live in now. That's a really good idea, right? And so, you know, you can issue, we're going to do these lockdown drills once a month. So we would do that. And so my mental health clinician came to me after we did a drill, and she said, you know, you really should announce that you're going to do a lockdown drill. And I said, well, you know, usually fire drills, you like to do a drill so you can see how people react if they think it's an emergency. She said, yes, but when you do that and people go to the front of the room and they're in a small group and they have to remain silent and the lights are out, that triggers some people. It triggers trauma. And so when you do those drills, oftentimes we will have kids coming to us because it's triggered something that can spiral them. And so that's something that I wouldn't think about unless I had somebody to help me think about that. So now we're very intentional about those kind of things. So that's like a concrete example of how it's much deeper. And the last example I want to give you related to that, a year ago, there was a car about 20 yards in front of our steps of the school that was on fire. It wasn't violence. It wasn't anything weird. It was just on fire, and it was a big fire. It wasn't like a little fire. And so, you know, we were out there making sure kids get in, but it wasn't the videotape that I saw about the car. When you look at the videotape, I watched kids walking to school past the car, and none of them were even turning around and looking at it. And so if that happens at Catonsville High School, that's a major deal. What I saw in that video, that phone video that I had, was we have kids that this is nothing.
Right.
They're numb to that. Like, the whole car was engulfed in flames. And so if you think about what's going on in that child's life, that you have this happening right in front of your school and you don't even flinch, there's a depth to that that a mental health clinician and people trained can do a lot more than just the guidance counselor aspect of it.
You know, it's interesting, Chris. We had Brandon Scott on not long ago, and he talked about, you know, his passion for education and helping our neighborhoods become stronger. And he talked about, as a young boy in Park Heights, just what you said, walking to school, and it wasn't unusual where you occasionally would have to walk past the chalk on a sidewalk where there had been a crime scene. And as you said,
yeah,
in the schools that you worked at, you know, you worked at Sparrows Point in the county, you worked at Catonsville High, you then went to Harford County, see Milton Wright, all three of what I'm going to describe as pretty typical suburban, leave it to Beaver, for those of a certain generation, high schools. Describe, Chris, because you've had all of those experiences, how does Benjamin Franklin and the student population at Benjamin Franklin, how does that feel or look differently than those suburban experiences that you had?
You broke up a little bit, but I think you would ask how the student body here compares to the schools that I've been in and how it looks different.
Well, why it looks, you know, does it look different? Does it feel different? How is it similar to those suburban experiences, and how is it different?
Some of the examples that I just gave, if I were working at one of those other schools you just named, and when Council President Scott was on, I listened to that, and I think our kids walk through that, or what they have to do to get to school on a daily basis, some of the things that they are exposed to, if that were to happen at Sparrows Point or Catonsville or wherever, the schools that I'd been in, that could have shut the school down. I mean, like, if there was a chalk outline or a homicide in front of the school on Bloomsbury in front of Catonsville, like, that would be a major thing that could disrupt the school day. When kids are coming to school at Benjamin Franklin, they're coming from all over the city. So Baltimore City has a school choice program. So they don't just come to school because they live in their neighborhood. They choose if they want to come here. So they come from East Baltimore, West Baltimore. They come from everywhere.
Why would they choose you? What would I be interested in or prolific at? I chose Don because of journalism, right? So
right.
Why would I come to Benjamin Franklin?
Well, thank you for that softball, because that's an easy one. When we got here in 2011, we had the exact opposite way of looking at the school. The school was known as Dirty Bend. It was a middle school. It had plummeted in enrollment, and then they had transitioned it to, it was supposed to be closed in 2008. They transitioned it to a high school. It almost was closed again in 2011. Instead, they decided to turn it in turnaround status. I was hired. I was able to hire everybody from scratch, the entire building. And when we built it, we weren't going to create the magnet. I listened to Dr. Berger. The magnet wasn't our way to go. We weren't going to say, if you want to do, we have a CTE program here called it's agriculture science. We weren't going to be, hey, if you're interested in agriculture science, come to Ben Franklin. Now, if you are, you can come. But what we wanted to do was we wanted to build a school in Brooklyn, Curtis Bay, that people would come to because it's a good school that customizes the education to what you need. So when you walk in the front door, instead of us saying, we are the school that does journalism, we said, no, we're the school that addresses your individual needs. So when we did that, every single year we've more than doubled our enrollment. We've grown every single year where we're over 500 now, and it's a small school compared to those larger districts, but we went from 226 kids to over 500, close to 600 kids. And when you customize with the community school model, that's how you end up with things like a child care center, which we have. Now, some schools that Don's work with in the county, they have child care programs where you teach how to be a, you know, a licensed daycare. This is different. This is the only school in the city where we found that when a student was pregnant, they would go, they would leave their home school, they would go to a program for 6 months, and then they would go back to their home school, right? We were like, well, why would we do that? It's like sort of like saying we're ostracizing you. So when we looked at our data, we saw that we had an attendance problem because we have a high teen pregnancy rate in Brooklyn and Curtis Bay. So through the partnerships with Bill Ferguson being a big driving force and the United Way and a lot of help, we created the family center in which if you have a child, you would bring your child, but it was going to be manned by the United Way Ben Center, because I don't know nothing about birthing new babies, Don. So I'm like, I run a high school. So I was told by my colleagues, you're crazy. You're going to bring six-week-old to four-month-old baby into the high school. What are you thinking? And I said, but our kids aren't coming to school because they're staying home or they're for daycare. So through the customized approach of bringing people in, I said, we're not going to do a baby drop, but instead we're going to teach our kids how to be good parents and also good students. So while the baby's doing that, our moms, usually moms, I think we've had a dad once, but mom, you know, during lunch, they take time, they go and eat with their baby. They're learning attachment issues. They're doing the social emotional reading to their child. And what I see with my eyes is I have parents through my experiences here where in a parent conference, they may be doing the best they can, but the way when they bring little kids in with them, sometimes it's not the healthiest of experiences to watch. But when I see my teenagers who are parents leaving school with their little ones holding their hand walking out, I'm seeing a relationship which is breaking the cycle.
And I was a high school parent, so you speak to me. I had a child my senior year of high school, so he's now 35 as of a couple of weeks ago. But, you know, that does speak to me, and certainly there was a stigma on me, and certainly I wasn't the pregnant girl, right? So, you know, that was 35 years ago. The fact that that's being addressed as something is, it's kind of remarkable, quite frankly.
I find it inspiring, Chris, and that was one of our goals, was to talk to folks who are doing these special things.
A little differently.
Better. Doing special, making the city better. We just spoke to Mike Sipe, Southwest Partnership, and Mike was talking about the importance, one of his goals, and he believed that 10 or 15 years out, if we look at the seven neighborhoods that he's working in, that one of the goals is to have every one of those local schools be a school that everyone's proud to send their children to. So now I ask you the $64,000 question. You know, I always said I had the Jennifer and Jeffrey rule. Would I be happy if Jennifer and Jeffrey are in this school? Would I be happy if Jennifer and Jeffrey are in this class? I always viewed myself as a surrogate parent to all those kids who are there. Would you, do you have Ben Franklin now at a point where you could look people in the eye and say, your kid comes here, they're going to get a good education?
Yes. In fact, to match what you brought up and asked and what Nestor talked about 35 years ago, is that the difference with the students who are coming here, and I don't know, Nestor, I don't know your background or socioeconomic background growing up and what it was like when you were a senior in high school.
Well, Johnny O ripped my school down because it was built in 1914. I went to Colgate Elementary. I went to Hollabird Middle and Dundalk High School. Dundalk High School, Don and got together with Kevin and ripped it down, built a palace
Taj
over
Mahal.
There at Dundalk.
So go back to your point, Chris.
But I think what I'm trying to get at is that when you had your son and you were a senior in high school, I can't speak to how that could, without the support you may have had outside of school, that could have ended your education.
1,000,000%, yes.
At Benjamin Franklin, with the student population in Baltimore City, that can feasibly end an education, which has ripple effects. So you have
it has ended many educations, I'm sure, right? Like part of the issue in the city is for over 40 years, how many of those pregnant girls did not finish school, and now there is an opportunity for this. And maybe later GED, you know, whatever happens later in life, but at that point, when you're 15, 16, 17 years old, you need that education. You have to have
it. Right. Well, through our school, close to 80% of the teen parents who have gone through school using this center have graduated, and that's double the average nationally. So dovetailing that back into Don's point, do we have it to the point where a kid would want to come here and get a great education? No, because I don't think I'm ever going to be satisfied with that. Are we better, and are we moving in a direction where that's the case? Without a doubt. I believe in my heart that if a child comes to school for 4 years at Benjamin Franklin High School, they are leaving here with an outstanding education, and they're prepared. The problem with urban education, the way that with all the influences, is that I rarely see a child for 4 years straight. Our school has a lot of different type populations. We're very heterogeneously grouped here, and so we have a 25% ESOL population, and so we have 25%
for Nestor. That's students who don't speak.
My brother was an ESOL student. Okay. My brother was raised in Venezuela.
He yells at me all the time about the words.
You know what? I yell at Harbaugh too when he starts saying stuff that's above my pay grade. Like, bring it down for the rest of us, Coach. You know what I mean?
Well, ELL is English language learners. So this would be a young person who comes to this country and may not have been in school for multiple years. They've come to this country under whatever circumstances, could be refugee status, could be anything, and we plop them in an American school where we're ringing the bell and telling them when they can pee, and we're doing it in a foreign language, and we're also throwing math at them, and they're trying to cope with, I am in a new country, possibly meeting my parent for the first time because I've been estranged from them for 15 years. And so if they come here, there's elements to that which go way beyond just teaching them, right? And so we have 25% of our students fall into that category. We have 25% of our students have IEPs, which would be a separate number, because they usually don't overlap too much with the ELL population. So 50% of the students who come here either have a learning need or don't speak English as a first language. So it's 50% of your population. We have an outstanding special education department, which is why that keeps growing, because people, it's school choice, remember. So people want to come here. Actually, we have situations where people ask to come here because an experience they might be having somewhere else isn't a good experience. So we keep growing, but when you grow, you also are bringing in a lot of needs, which are very complicated. So the mobility that comes in and out with whether it's ELL students or just any student for that matter, you could possibly have a student who comes in as a ninth grader that's been in four or five middle schools in their eighth grade year. So there's an impact there. So when they're in high school, they might come in, they might come back a year later, they might not. You might not be able to find them. We have that mobility rate, although we're reducing it, is just very different. So to answer the question that Don asked, have we created a place that we're proud that we think that kids are going to get a good education? Yes, without a doubt. The problem is that the influencers on education beyond the school walls are always going to be a challenge, and I'm not satisfied with addressing those.
We're with Chris Battaglia, principal at Benjamin Franklin High School in Baltimore City, making a real difference. Chris, a couple quick questions. It's hard work that you guys are doing each and every day. You able to retain staff? What's turnover in staff look like?
Oh, yes. So I'm going to answer that in a two-part. We have had, in my ninth year here, we've had three teachers transfer to another Baltimore City school in 9 years.
Wow.
And so we're very proud of that. And I hate the fact that there's three, because they were all for personal reasons. One, that their wife went back to work and he needed to be closer to home, so he moved. Not all of them moved because of family issues. But not because of the school. So as it relates to retaining teachers who want to remain teachers, we have an outstanding rate.
Great.
In fact, we recruit really well, too. We've never started a school year with a vacancy.
Wow.
Where that's not always the case. Some schools go through the whole year with a vacancy. So we really care about staff, and we try. We know it's a very difficult job, so we try our best to reduce stress, but there's no way you can.
No, it's tough work.
Turnover, I know you had, I don't know which one of your guests was talking about Teach for America. I'm not sure which
Stuart
one.
Stuart Berg.
You have
Stuart Berger.
They have a lot of Teach for America, and they're outstanding teachers. But their circumstances might be different. So we do have turnover, such as they've done it for a few years, and some decide to go back to grad school, or they move back home. But we have a lot of TFA who, after the 2 years that they commit to, they've been here for 8 years, 9 years, and so it's, so the turnover, I would say, is I jokingly say either we kick them, we drive them out of education altogether, or they stay because they're not going to another city school, because I think that we do a really good job here, and I think that the staff appreciates that.
Chris, that's great.
Thanks for taking time with us and exploring what it means to be a principal in the modern era, man. You taught me a lot. That's all the Baltimore Positive is about. We're finding people making a difference, and anybody needs information about what you do, where's the best place? Because I went sort of banging around looking for information about Benjamin Franklin High School.
I mean, the website's not always the best up-to-date thing, but obviously they go to the city school's website, they can find some information out. I think that the best thing is, especially when it comes to families who want to learn more about us, just pick up the phone and call. You come in, and we don't do open houses, which is like put up a bunch of balloons and come in and see some kind of a stale presentation. We believe that if you want to really know what's going on here, and this invitation goes to you and Don without a doubt, come in and see it when the school is actually running so you can see reality, and I think you'll be very impressed.
We're going to take you up on that, Chris.
We're
going to come over. We're going to take a field trip. And I would say to our listeners again, as you dive into Kerwin, you're going to hear a lot about community schools. I don't think you could have heard a more comprehensive or heartfelt description of what a community school does, why it makes a difference, and why then maybe Kerwin is worthy of the discussion that we're having at state level. My good friend Chris Battaglia, thank you.
Thank you so much, guys. I really appreciate you taking time to give me a call.
You got it. Baltimore Positive, alive and well, doing a bye week presentation, giving you bonus Baltimore Positive from the studio. He's Don Moeller. I'm Nestor. Make sure you're supporting our sponsors. Jennings Cafe. We'll be back out there very soon. I need a Jennings burger as well as some of that lasagna. Baseball games on there all week, as well as football on the weekends. And don't forget, as well, at State Fair, where I loaded up on the chicken and waffles. Even took my wife out there for breakfast. They've got new rock stars on the wall at State Fair. Make sure you're dropping by and saying hello. Also, Fadley's.
So you got crab cakes, you got chicken and waffles, you got the Jennings burger. You're all set.
Oh, I got to get a salad. Mix a salad.
There we go.
They can get a salad down there as well. As well as Fadley's and the delicious crab cakes we have down at Lexington Market. Lots and lots of stuff out at Baltimore Positive. Hope you're subscribing, checking it out, and sharing it when you see something you like. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, and WNST Baltimore Positive.